Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Take the little ass of my college football picks. I'm not going to lie. 4-1. And, you know, frankly, it should have been 5-0. But listen, I digress. Not as good in the NFL, but 2-3, right? I think 2-3 in the NFL, so 6-4 overall. Sorry I made you money if you follow all my picks. My bad, right? Ravens couldn't complete the task and win and cover. That was, in fact, my bad. Just flat out missed on a couple others. The Niners are exceptionally well coached and don't think Jared Goff played particularly well. There's a bunch of stuff going on in that Sunday night game. The Dodgers will take on the Rays in the World Series. I have to say this. I chose baseball over football in terms of main TV last night, and I was rewarded with fall baseball. It was awesome. Like, you can tell me, hey, too many games. Hey, it's boring. Hey, there's a lot of stuff. But I legitimately had a great time with my children watching the Dodgers. And I'm not a Dodger fan. I like the Dodgers. I'm an Angel fan. As a native, I'm not an Angelino, though, right? I'm a Orange Countyan or whatever. I don't even know what that would be called. But that was great. And John Smoltz and Joe Davis, by the way, who called the game because Joe Buck was calling Tampa versus Green Bay. Anyway, lot to get to. Let me start with the Tampa Green Bay game. What an ass whooping, huh? Woo, woo, woo. And I guess part of it is everybody catches a whooping every now and again, right? That's like kind of what happens. Everybody catches a whooping, and we should at some point just go, hey, it's a beatdown. It was going to happen at some point. And Aaron Rodgers even said, I felt like we needed a little bit of a wake-up call this season because things have been so good. I feel like we need a little kick in the ass a little bit. Well, you got it, right? You absolutely got it. Do you remember last year they had two regular season trips to California and both times they were just kind of asleep at the wheel and got their butts kicked? That's exactly what happened yesterday. Now, it should be pointed out that things were going smoothly. They're up 10-0, and Aaron Rodgers was kind of feeling himself as he just kind of flung the ball on an out pattern to Devontae Adams, and the Buccaneers were sitting on the route and took it back for a pick six. But I don't believe any quarterback is great when you constantly have a muddied pocket. But Rodgers is a guy that we thought had great escapability, great creativity, and a guy who could just flat out make plays. Now, I noticed something that I don't know how many other people mentioned. Is it Tonyan, right? The tight end? He kind of tweaked his knee. It was on a big third down where he should have been open. It was actually right before the pick. He tweaked his knee, and one, it caused them to not get a first down because he was late out of a break because of it. And two, when he went out of the game, that was kind of the safety net a little bit for Aaron Rodgers over the middle against some of these blitzes. But this was a house of cards. That's what happened there. A complete house of cards. And they all fell down. As soon as Aaron Rodgers threw those two picks, the team collapsed. But maybe instead of paying attention to Rodgers, we should pay attention to Tom Brady and the genius that is Brady. Sure, he has better offensive weapons, but he's found a way to use Rob Gronkowski. And more than anything, he tries to make smart plays on time, and he covers for his his inability to make as many plays, not just with the supporting cast, but with an outstanding defense. Buccaneers are the number two overall defense, according to Football Outsiders. When the Patriots' defense ranked in points per game the last four seasons, first, fifth, sixth, first. All right, like, Brady's the same Brady. He's fine. When he gets time, he can make throws. When he doesn't, he's under duress. He's not very good. He's immobile. He throws a nice deep ball, nice touch passes. He's not throwing guys open nearly as much anymore, if at all. The level of creativity has been damped down because outside of Gronk, he hasn't worked with these other guys. So he doesn't have a Welker, a Amendola, an Edelman, a guy he always seems to find on third down. He hasn't established that relationship yet. But in the meantime, you know, you just play it safe, you play it smart, and your defense, you know, keeps you in and gets you leads in games. And the Green Bay Packers crumbled a bit. Not a bit. They completely crumbled. The good news is that that was, on many levels, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going back to their last game a week ago Thursday, and so many other teams. The bad news is we've actually seen this before from the Packers with Matt LaFleur as their head coach and Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, and they haven't seemed to fix these problems, right? What happened last night is the same thing that happened against the Niners twice last year. Just overwhelmed by a pass rush, and once they got behind, Aaron Rodgers seemed to revert to some of his old habits. And oh yeah, by the way, Aaron Rodgers was off. He was just not good. It was a moment to put the league on notice. They could not do it. And instead, Tampa, just beaming with confidence, ends up scoring 38 unanswered points. That's remarkable. There was a lot of interesting things that happened yesterday. The Colts getting three touchdowns down and coming back against a young Cincinnati team. The Tennessee-Houston game that went overtime. The Vikings continue to struggle as Atlanta got their first win. I don't know if I'm using this term correctly, but low-key, Cam Newton was trash yesterday. He was bad. And I do wonder if we all overreacted to Cam early in the season, much the way we overreact to others that we have low expectations of early in the season. Jared Goff was goffle. I love that I got a chance to see Tua play. I do think that Detroit is a lot better than their record again. Baker Mayfield, as we told you, was the weak link, and man, did it look like it yesterday in Pittsburgh. But the number one thing that I learned is same old Packers, where when Rodgers falters and gets a little bit behind and a little bit pissy with the play calling, with his own play, with his pass protection, they don't react well. And they were just overwhelmed by a pass rush. And that Tom Brady's smart. Don't just find a team with weapons, find a team with a defense so that you can make plays or not make plays. And if you don't, the defense can pick you up. Different team, different uniform, different coach, different offense, same Tom Brady. Same Tom Brady.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We got a lot to get to. Let's turn to Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl champion quarterback. He is he's also the head coach at Lipscomb Academy, who I'm sure you guys get a dominant win this week.
We did. Another shutout, our fourth in the last 6 weeks, 41-0.
41-0. Good. Okay, so it's not like Greg Williams' offense working against defense. It's you guys working together. I want to ask you about Carson Wentz because the first half couldn't have been any worse. The second half, I felt like he balled out. Now, I know they lost and there was a weird call for the two-point conversion that they went for, but am I wrong to think that he actually played really, really well?
Yeah, I think he's really showing that warrior spirit that he has. I think that's what most people that got to know him through the draft process grew to love about him. And then he's shown that early in his career. He's a great competitor. He'll fight to the bitter end. Same thing that makes you laugh, makes you cry. You know, sometimes he does these Superman-type things, and you giggle like, oh, my gosh, how do you do that? And then they'll do it again, and it'll be an interception. So it's that same Brett Favre mentality of trying to win every single play. But there's something admirable about that. I mean, the kid's a great competitor. He doesn't make excuses when things go bad. He's a positive guy. His teammates love him. His coaches love him. I mean, I really think he's one day going to be a champion. He's going to take a team from week one all the way to the Super Bowl, and all this character and grit he's developing early in his career is going to pay off.
Trent Dilfer, our guest in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What happened to Aaron Rodgers after the two picks? It looked bad, but, I mean, talk me through everything.
Yeah, it looked a little bit like a defeatist mentality. I did call him this morning, and he was killing him for being a front runner and all that stuff. I'm not willing to go there. I think Aaron's a great competitor. I think he was frustrated. It's come pretty easy for the Packers this year. They've had that really nice balance of Aaron's command spread stuff at the line of scrimmage and Matt's, you know, action power stuff. And so far they've kind of had everybody off balance. And this Todd Bowles and this defense kind of got after him a little bit, and you can sense some frustration. The biggest thing I saw, and it's hard to see on TV, I haven't watched the coach's tape.
Sure.
But I know Todd Bowles, and I know how he defends you, and you could see kind of half of these looks on the TV copy. Is he doesn't let you read his mail. What I mean by that is most great quarterbacks are going to get up there, they're going to use the count to kind of figure out, they're going to open your envelope and read the mail that you have, meaning they're going to figure you out. And he doesn't let you do that. So everything you do against him has to be after the ball snap. And I think Aaron guessed a little bit. I think he thought he saw what he thought he was going to see one thing, and he saw another after the ball was snapped and got him in trouble. And he never really figured him out. And that happens. I've seen it happen to Tom Brady playing against Rex Ryan before. If they play each other again in the playoffs, I would think it would be very different. I think he will have a better opportunity to figure out how Todd Bowles attacked him, how the defense attacked him, and he'll have more answers.
Yeah, no, it's really stunning to see a team that looks so good look so bad. Does feel like Brady, I know the score wouldn't indicate 38 straight unanswered points. His level of comfort is he's finding ways to get Gronk the ball. That seems to me kind of the change that I've seen. What have you seen? Again, I know only TV copy in that offense and how they're evolving.
I would agree with that. I think you got to have your blankie, right? Every little kid likes to have their blankie. It makes them feel comfortable. And a lot of times that's the tight end, especially when it's a Hall of Fame tight end and Gronk. I think Tom is, they've morphed the offense between his kind of high completion percentage stuff he did in New England and the highly aggressive down the field stuff that Bruce Arians has always done. But the nice balance in there is the tight end, because he can do both. It takes time too. We're just 2 weeks into the regular season, if you count the first four as the preseason, because they didn't have a preseason. So, getting comfortable, fitting, maybe that's right. Getting new people to fit properly takes some time, and I think you're starting to see Brady and Gronk fit into this Arians offense and kind of put their signature on. I think it's only going to get better. They may still have some ebb and flows, but I think it's going to be really good by the end.
What was wrong with Cam Newton yesterday?
He's just not built for this type of. He's built for a very specific offense. Okay, so he's built to be a power runner, threaten teams with his legs, be an action pass kind of chunk thrower. He's not built for this completion-based offense. I mean, it's the last play, but it's the most glaringly obvious play of the difference is they dial up a really good conversion play there at the end on fourth down, and they have two open receivers. If he throws it on time and accurately, it's a first down, and he dirts it. I mean, that's the difference between him and a guy that's a surgeon from the pocket. They need to be very creative around what type of offense they run with Cam.
I totally agree with you, right? I mean, like, there are just going to be some things that he does that are extraordinary, but there's some things that limit him. And if you try and do the things that limit him, that's what you're going to get.
Yep. I think if you're not one of the handful of best, right? So you're Rodgers, you're Brady, you're Mahomes, Russell, whoever you want to put else you want to put on that 6 to 8 best of the best of the best. You have limitations, and it's up to your play caller to avoid those things. It's not a bad thing. You still probably go to a bunch of Pro Bowls with limitations, but in critical moments, you better be calling the stuff that's not a limitation for the player.
What's different about Kirk Cousins this year as opposed to last year?
I don't know. I don't know. I walked in yesterday. I had a bunch of them on. I'm just watching that one. I'm watching the receptions. I'm like, what is going on? I don't know. I wish I did. I like Kirk. I'm rooting for Kirk. It's amazing how much one receiver, losing a receiver can hurt a team, and getting a receiver can help a team. With Diggs going to Buffalo and leaving Minnesota, I don't know if it's that simple, but it sure does look that simple.
Well, is it maybe, is it Stephans? Because they did get Jefferson. I know Jefferson is not where Diggs is now, right? As a rookie. I just wonder. I just wonder if it's Stefanski not having Stefanski, a guy who he really, you know, that and I know that they were running some of this system last year without Stefanski, with Stefanski, but is it that?
Well, it was the opposite last year. Remember, he was struggling when Stefanski was taking the lead and Kubiak took over. So it's actually it's the opposite of that. I was expecting Kirk to have a huge year because Kubiak was running the show completely. Last year, it was Kubiak that balanced the thing out. I mean, go back to the beginning of last year, he wasn't playing very well, and then Kubiak kind of balanced the thing out. So I really don't know. I know you put me on the phone to answer these questions.
No,
I don't have an answer for
no,
you.
No, okay. All right. Well, what about Baker? Obviously, you know, full disclosure, that was what happened, was kind of my prediction of what would happen. You can't run the football against that Pittsburgh defense. They're nasty. And when you take them out of kind of their timing and their rhythm and their play action stuff, like, you know, Baker, as you and I have discussed before, he wants to play like somebody that he is not, and he doesn't have the athletic ability or the arm. And I think it's a growing frustration. But he's also hurt, and he took a couple of good licks. What's your take on what happened to Baker and that offense in Pittsburgh yesterday?
So two things. If you go back and look at the Steelers' defenses all the way back to when I played, they're very predictable to take advantage of quarterbacks that can't go deep into progressions. So they base their whole defensive passing game around taking away a quarterback's first look.
Sure.
So they're going to force you to work through a progression. And they're going to do that while they're bringing five most of the time, or some type of exotic four, an overload where they're dropping other guys. So that's been their formula forever. Quarterbacks at Gasham are guys that can work deep and handle the line of scrimmage, pick up all their stunts and blitzes, so kind of control the line of scrimmage, and then work deep into a progression. So every week, I've never bet on a game in my life in any sport. Every once in a while, I kind of want to bet on a Steelers game when they're playing a quarterback that can't get deep in progressions, because you just kind of know what the story is going to, how it's going to unfold. Now, saying that, I think Baker's a guy that still doesn't work even progressions. He's also a guy that's really lacking physical confidence in the pocket. Part of that might be injury. I've been there. You're banged up. You don't really feel like taking 15 hits in the ribs all day long. So you're going to try to find the easy way and get out of there. He's a guy that his clock is speeding up in the pocket because he doesn't have the confidence to sit in there, especially when he's in gun. Now, for whatever reason, when he's under center and it's play action, he's got a little more patience, he's got a little more rhythm, and he's more successful. But when he catches, as soon as any color shows inside, he's not playing on the schedule of the offense. He's speeding up that schedule, and it's getting them a lot of trouble.
Trent Dilfer, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, I watched Lamar play yesterday, and I know they won, but, I mean, yesterday they were on time, on schedule. They got this big lead, and then it felt like the offense just fell flat. And then late in the game, when all they needed was a first down, they got that one penalty, so it becomes third and nine instead of, you know, like a third and five or six. And so he has to get in the shotgun and four wide, and the first sign of pressure, he drops his head, and he gets to where he wants to run. Are we seeing any sort of regression from Lamar? Or am I being a little too harsh in what I'm seeing?
No, I think, you know, it's. I got asked a question as he hit his ceiling. Well, his ceiling's pretty high, right? When you do the things that he does well. Now, his limitation would be must-pass situations. You know, when everybody on TV and everybody in the building knows he's throwing it. Now you don't have to worry about all the creativity in the run game, the action pass, multiple tight ends crossing and all that stuff. Now you're playing third down defense, and you're going to play it the same way against Lamar. You're going to play it against Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and the rest of them. Now he's at a distinct disadvantage. That's where the great ones separate themselves. That's why I'm not willing to put him on the Mount Rushmore of current NFL quarterbacks, because of that limitation. You put your Aaron, even a Drew Brees at his age, a Tom Brady, a Mahomes in that situation, and they're gonna better handle the line of scrimmage. They're gonna better handle getting through progressions. Lamar's not there yet. I still think he can get there. He's shown enough improvement in a short amount of time that makes me think he can get there, but he's not there yet. And I think that's the big key to playing Baltimore. If you go back and look at when they've stalled, is they lose on first down. You got to beat them on first down, because if you beat them on first down, you have better odds of getting them into a must-pass situation, either second or long or third and must. You get enough of those situations against Baltimore, now you're going to get Lamar at his not his best stuff, stuff that he's still growing. And now you have a real advantage, now you have a real chance of slowing down this offense.
Well, that's the voice of Trent Dilfer joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. A little closer to home, Tennessee Titans. They continue to find a way. I love the, you know, they do direct snaps, so you get the numbers count you want. They're right around the goal line to win the game in overtime. Vrabel's getting a lot of attention because he smartly knows the rules and sent out a guy for the 12th man on the field penalty. I'm wondering your level of buy-in. We talk about ceilings with teams. Is there ceiling a Super Bowl? Can you go to a Super Bowl playing with this kind of more limited playbook?
I don't know if I'd call it limited. I'll start with Vrabel. I think he needs to be considered one of the best coaches on the planet.
Sure.
Not because of the thing he did yesterday, how he manages his team. And I happen to be around the corner, right? So, I mean, we're literally 4 miles from each other.
Yep.
We as a staff study them every week. So I make our offensive staff kind of look at how, or our entire staff kind of look how they do things and just have conversations about it. I think it's a really, really, really good staff. You can learn a lot as coaches by studying them. Mike for years has been kind of that everybody in the NFL circle that I really trusted was saying, hey, he's the next great one. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. Now we're seeing it come to fruition. I think he's gotten the best out of some players. I mean, what they've done with Ryan Tannehill, I mean, he's in his 15 starts is playing, you know, MVP caliber football. His numbers are ridiculous. His winning percentage is ridiculous. So they're getting a lot out of Ryan. They found, obviously, a dominant back, and they build their offensive kind of around that. I don't know if it's limited in the sense that they just know who they are.
Agreed.
They know who they are maybe as well as anybody, and that's probably their genius, and I credit Mike with a lot of that. I think they're very much real. I think they absolutely can make some noise in the playoffs, if not make a run all the way to the Super Bowl.
It's funny. I was talking with Ryan Music, my producer, for the show, and I said that the three things I like about them is they know who they are, and they're built. Even go back to when Mike Munchak was there, like he wasn't a great coach, but it was the same plan to build from the line out, right? And they've experienced some of the playoffs, and I also think that this style goes against how many of these teams are built defensively. You know, where, you know, obviously there are some teams in the AFC who are built to stop the run, but many teams are built more, you know, to always be in the dime, always be in the nickel, and you can't play that way against Derrick Henry and their running game. Is that fair?
It's totally fair. You're going to see more of this. You know, things always go in waves, and I think we're starting to see the end of the spread wave because teams have drafted little and fast on defense. And, you know, even at the high school and college levels, we're having a ton of success in our high school level with playing six offensive linemen because everything's we're a spread team. So we get in six offensive linemen, we just pound you with spread receivers.
Right.
So, you know, you just see every level you're seeing this, you just take advantage of the trends and how teams are formatted. I think you're going to see more of it. The other thing I'll say about the Titans is they've overcome some adversity now. You know, being here in Nashville and going through this, all the stuff they've gone through with the COVID, they've had other setbacks this offseason. This is a group that gets through adversity really well, and they really like each other.
Yeah.
Like, this is a group that really, really likes each other. They have a ton of fun together. How they handled the whole tornado, I mean, it was just a blip on the national radar, but that tornado ripped through this community and caused a lot of upheaval. And that was, you know, they didn't just weather that storm. They were leaders during that time in our community. So there's a lot to like about this Titans team. I was busting Colin this morning. He needs to talk more about it. That's why you're better than Colin, because it was on your topic list. But this is a team that needs some national attention.
No, they're really, really good. And the liking each other, I don't think people understand how important that is. You know, like even Taylor Lewong, and who can be a polarizing guy to some people, Like when he tweeted out that he had a torn ACL, but like we're doing special things and like watch this. Like it wasn't a woe is me, I'm done. Everybody pay attention to me. It was, hey, we still got a really good team whether I'm playing or I'm not playing. And I think that part of that's Vrabel, right? That Vrabel at his age, he can still get down there and knock heads with those guys and they respect him. They'll play hard for him. And every once in a while, he shows them that he's paying attention. And that's what I think, like, the 12-man penalty thing is important because it shows he's not a meathead. He really is a thinking man's coach. And I don't know. I'm with you. I'm in on this team. I like where they're going. I like the things they're doing. Trent, great stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
No. If we're out of time, that's fine. You said most of it. They're a special group of kids. Taylor Lewan's a really good guy, too, by the way. A great team leader. Vrabel's got it going on, both from the intellectual standpoint, but also from the connection standpoint. He really connects well with his players and his coaches.
Awesome stuff, Trent. Congrats on the win. Maybe let the other team score every once in a while and not be such a jerk.
No.
Just let them score.
No.
Let them score. Thanks so much for joining us.
See you, buddy.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
It's interesting that Baker Mayfield gave the Browns hope, right? If you go back 2 years ago, Baker Mayfield becomes the starting quarterback. They won some games. I think they won 7 games that year. And Baker Mayfield and his persona and his belief in himself and his ability to raise up teammates, like he gave them actual hope. But I think that hope that he gave them allows them to see how good they can be. And I do believe that in order to be that good, Baker probably won't be their quarterback if, in fact, they can get to that next level. Does that make sense? I don't know. It made sense. I was driving around today and I was thinking about Baker and was trying to figure out exactly how to word what I thought. Like, I like Baker Mayfield. I think guys like playing with Baker Mayfield. But everyone has now seen the full Baker Mayfield, which we saw it against Georgia, I remember, in a college football playoff. You see it at times in the NFL level where he wants to run around back there like he's Russell Wilson. He's not. He wants to make throws like he's Brett Favre. He's not. And part of, and this goes to why what I like about the Titans. Like, the Titans know exactly who they are and what they are and why they are who they are and what they are. And they're okay with it. Like, look, we got some limitations and, you know, we're just okay with it. I don't know if Lamar can improve to this point, but I do feel like there's a little of Lamar still wanting to break through to be somebody that he's not. He's not an NFL spread game quarterback. He's not a guy. He has to run their offense, and that's kind of it. It has limitations. So there's maybe this is going to limit Lamar as well, but he has such freakish athletic ability and arm strength that maybe he can improve and overcome it. I just think there's some physical limitations there and a mental and emotional limitation to go with it, where Baker gave them hope because of his faith in himself, his belief in his ability to rise teammates up and get them to a higher level. And he is a competent quarterback when things are going well. But when under duress and he tries to win games on his own, he doesn't have it. Just doesn't. And that's not really, it's a knock on Baker, but it's not an ultimate. Like, there's not a lot of dudes that do have that extra ability. He's a little bit too small. He has a little bit less arm strength than he should. He has a little bit less athleticism than he should. Like, look, he was evaluated properly getting ready for the draft before he had that unbelievable year at OU where he was supposed to be a third, fourth, maybe even a fifth round draft pick based upon his ability. But he walks into a room and you're like, man, I believe in this cat. And I believe in myself. He has that feel. But there's just this limitation there that we're kidding ourselves if we don't understand that it exists. Not everybody can be a star quarterback just because they think they can be a star quarterback and they study the star quarterback thing. I'll tell you, it reminds me, I have a friend who's a broadcaster. He's been doing it longer than I have. He was a very good college basketball player. He's really good at analyzing basketball. He has a terrible voice. He just does not have, it's just really hard to listen to for long stretches. And that's kind of one of the things that is that people have a predetermined bias against. You have a terrible voice, even when you're doing television. If you're not, we don't see your face. We hear your voice. You can't do it. And that's where I feel like he is.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are 26 hours or so, 27 hours from World Series Game 1. Clayton Kershaw is going to get the start for the Dodgers. I don't know if that's a surprise. Thankfully, they didn't use him at all. Tyler Glasnow is going to. But Tyler Glasnow was throwing yesterday in the Rays' bullpen late in that eighth inning. I guess getting ready to come in and maybe save the day. They didn't end up needing him. So there's a bunch to get to. You know what? Let's get an expert's perspective, a guy who he was good. He was the NL MVP, of course, for the Philadelphia Phillies. He's Ryan Howard. He's kind enough to spend some time with us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, how are we doing? I'm doing well.
Okay, let's start with the Dodgers. Obviously, record-wise, perception-wise, they were the better team. But in your mind, what changed that series?
I think in my mind, obviously the Braves had a couple of mishaps that took place. The Dodgers took advantage. I mean, both teams, I think as Clayton Kershaw put it, both teams fed off of momentum very, very well. And I think that going into the game seven, when there's a game seven, all bets are off. And I think it was a very exciting game seven. What it came down to were, some key plays and some key things that took place. Obviously, Mookie, robbing my guy Freddie Freeman of the home run. Then you had the rundown situation where, Riley gets or the Dodgers get the double play from the play at the plate with runners on second and third with nobody out. I mean, and then obviously, yeah, you're looking at the pitch of Kiki Hernandez coming up, hitting the game-tying homer, and then Bellinger having a great at-bat and battling pitches and getting a pitch to where he puts it up in the upper deck. So, it was just a lot of ebb and flows, an emotional roller coaster of a game seven.
Anything cooler than hitting that, like you being a lefty? I said this before, like, first of all, lefties, it's way sweeter to watch you guys swing. And then to hit one that effortlessly, that far in that moment, you've hit as big a home runs as, what is that feeling actually like?
It's an amazing feeling, especially things get magnified in the postseason. Doing it during the regular season is one thing, but to do it in a situation on that kind of a stage where, I think it was, seventh inning?
Yep.
Where your team has been down over the course of this series and you haven't had the best series yourself personally, but kind of having some breakthrough, kind of having some come around and to put the bat together the way that Cody Bellinger put together in that moment and have it hit. I bet he didn't even feel the ball off the bat. It was probably one of those where I think he probably felt like it was so flush he didn't even feel it off the bat. And it's a huge moment for him, a big moment for the team as well. So for him, I think that's kind of a momentum builder, and you got to watch out for him in this series next go round.
The biggest one I can remember. I remember Pujols hitting that one off Lidge. Was that like 05?
Oh, yeah.
That shook Lidge for like a year. Like I know he came back and he was with you guys, I think, right after that, and it literally shook him for almost a year, maybe even 2 years before he was back, and he was right.
Oh yeah, I mean it's when you have those kind of situations, I don't think that's a thing that's going to be bothersome for Chris Martin, but yeah, I mean that home run from Pujols definitely had an effect, and it's just one of those things where you got to have a short term memory as a pitcher, and Lidgey came back, had a fresh clean slate when he came with us, and took full advantage of it and was lights out.
Yeah, no, he blew up the next year, and then they got rid of him. He came to you guys, and then in his second year, that's when he got back to being a dominant closer, 41 saves, was an all-star, was got MVP votes, everything. Like, it took him a while, but he did, in fact, recover. All right, so help me with this. Let's start with Kershaw, okay? You know, Kershaw, he got into a mess in the sixth. He's not the same pitcher like when you faced him, right? He's just not in terms of the power. Obviously, so much of it's about his slider. What's your thoughts on Kershaw starting game one for the Dodgers?
I mean, I think it's poetic justice. I think for a guy like Kershaw, who's been there, done everything that he's done for the Dodgers organization, being in this situation. I mean, he's been that ace for so many years. He's going to be a guy that's going to be poised and ready for the situation. So, you know, he threw well. He threw well, I think, against the Braves in his start. You know, just made a couple little mistakes. So, for Kershaw, he's just got to go out there, be himself. I know that there's the whole postseason thing that goes on, but, you know, hey, he's got a squad behind him that can hit. And he goes out there, posts up. Those guys are going to be right there with him. And I think it's, you know, as the Dodgers have shown, there's a lot of resiliency in that team.
What do you do if you're Dave Roberts and Kenley's just not the same guy? Like, what do you do? Like, I put you, everybody wanted to be the manager. You played in all these big games. You know what this is like. I put you, like, what do you do? How do you handle the ninth inning?
How are you?
I think with Kenley, you just kind of have to roll with it. He's got a lot of arms, a lot of depth in the pen over there. And again, that's another guy who's been there for you throughout the year. So Dave is going to give him the respect that's due. But I think also Kenley's going to know that, hey, this is about trying to get a ring and win a championship. So whatever or whenever his number is called, he's going to answer the bell. So, you know, you just hope that he can stay on top of things and be there when they need him.
How old, Ryan? How old is she?
Oh, one. Huh. One. Yeah, I got three of them. Three girls about to be – the oldest one is about to be six, middle one's about to be four, and then the baby just turned one, so – A lot of heat going around the Howard household.
I got you. Listen, I have twin girls who are now 14. I'm going to give you some advice. Now, obviously, you're in a different financial bracket than I am, but I would keep...
Man, talk to me.
Keep them away from the... Well, the horses keep them away from the boys, but they also are going to keep you working. So they're going, you know, like if regular athlete, like the horses are there at about six, they're going to be like, Daddy, I want to try riding a pony, and it's really cool. But once they go all in, it is a constant check riding fest. I'm just going to...
That's where my four-year-old is right now. She's on a horse kick. She's liking horses. So.
Yeah, well, listen.
Haven't gone down that path yet.
Okay, but if they do, the good thing is I can attest at 14, there may be some interest in boys, but there's no time, and they got to take care of everything down there, whatever. They get up early in the morning. That part is good, but I don't know how it equates in terms of financially. It's a lot. Ryan Howard joining us thanks to Scott's Field refurbishment program. This is awesome, right? So Scott's is going around the country and putting all this money into Little League and softball fields, right? That's kind of what the refurbishment program is, isn't it?
Yes, most definitely. So Scott's has been going since 2016. They've refurbished over two dozen fields with an equation of, you know, $1.75 million in support. And it's basically gone around and helping to refurbish and revitalize these fields to give these kids the opportunity to be able to go out, play in a safe spot, in a good spot, not only for them but for their communities. And giving them the opportunity to learn and grow in the game of baseball and softball.
It's awesome. I got an 11-year-old who's a little jumpy. He got hit in the eye with a fastball. Any words of wisdom? I gave you words of wisdom on your daughters. Any words of wisdom on trying to find a way where he's not scared of what he thinks is wild pitching at his age?
I mean, it's tough. Everybody's gone through it. I mean, we've all at some point in time gotten hit with the ball. I got hit in the ball one time, I think, playing catch in the eye before the game and still played the game. So, I mean, it's one of those things that happens. It hurts for a little bit, and it'll go away. But yeah, you can't be scared. You can't be afraid of it. I mean, it hurts for a second, and then you just got to jump back out there.
Best you've ever, we talked about what it feels like to hit that baseball. Best you've ever hit a baseball in a game.
Man. Oof. I mean,
I know there's a lot to choose from. I get it. There's a lot. It wasn't like there's that one time. There's a bunch of times. When you close your eyes and you think of, holy crap, I really got a hold of that one, which is the one that comes to your mind first?
Man, I probably got to take it back to 06 against the Yankees and Mussina. I hit the ball up to the third deck in Philly. It was just one of those balls where it's like, man, it was kind of a surprise. Like, I knew I hit it good, but it was just kind of a surprise that, like, where it landed and hitting it up into the third deck.
But, you know, you only hit 58 that year. Had you hit 60, we would have had a different conversation. Yeah. But 58, it's, you know, it's a couple short of the Maris number, you know, and so we can't, like, let's not act like it was that special. But I'm kidding, of course. All right, get back to wrangling those girlies. Thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's Ryan Howard joining us, former NL MVP, getting us ready for the World Series. I love that he's like, yeah, you probably don't even feel hitting the baseball. Like, yeah.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.